touch with Cornick while he was in Guernica's captivity by using a spirit of air communication. After I unlocked telepathy, I forgot about this spirit and the capabilities it offered, but now the time had come to cash it in again. All of my spirits had been turned off, including this one, and I still hadn't managed to learn them all after returning to the game, but my premonition was telling me that I was moving in the right direction. And behind his back, a wing. I was compelled to sing my song in my mind, once and again ignoring the system notification about my inability to summon a spirit that wasn't in my spellbook. I knew what I wanted. I knew how to do it, and all I had to do was keep bashing my head against the system. From the heat upon his breath, the system refused to be bashed by my head. The devs had done a fine job blocking the shaman's secret skill of ultimately being able to summon whatever spirit he wished to. Following the update, my class has once again been turned into a humdrum nothing, which no one wanted to play. How are you supposed to live a peaceful shamanic life in Barleona if you're constantly boxed in and kept from exercising your imagination? Who even needs this kind of treatment? Blast it all to hell! Design mode! I shoved away the well-lit room that appeared before me like some old and obsolete piece of junk. I needed my native, dark version of design mode that no one would ever forbid me from working in. I can't summon a spirit. That's a fact that I'll have to abide by. But no one can keep me from crafting one. In design mode, the spirit of air communication appeared without any questions, as if he had been standing at the entrance to my mind, waiting for his chance to slip through the erected barriers. I created the simplest ring that I could from the materials I had in my bag, unwillingly shoving one of the diamonds intended for the pendants in it, and, using the Instill Essence skill, combine the spirit of communication with the diamond. This done, I examined the outcome. Under the rules of item crafting in Barleona, any new creation had to undergo a period of adaptation to the game world. Over several days, a recipe is generated for the item that permits the crafter to craft the physical item in the game. Only then can a player claim to have invented the new item. I didn't need that right now. My goal right now wasn't to create a ring. My goal was to get in touch with Cornick. Therefore, if I create the item here in design mode instead of out in reality, then... Shining candle fire springs. You have created a virtual item. You may use it for 31 crafting seconds. The item does not exist in the game world at large. Cornick, I need your help! Mayen? The goblin's surprise was evident even in telepathy. How? This time you're definitely barred from communicating telepathically. I'll explain later. I'm sending you my coordinates. I need your help. You're with the hermit? What the hell do you need with that lunatic? At the moment, it looks like I'm about to be enslaved forever. I need 20 seconds to get ready. She won't give you up without a fight. Hold on. The time expired. The ring with the spirit that I had used to call Cornick turned into a cloud before my eyes. It had performed its purpose in Barleona and no longer needed to exist. 20 seconds. Cornick knew that the hermit wouldn't give me up without a fight. Odd, but that was the way it was. That means I needed to help him. What can an incapacitated player, who can't even turn into his human form, do? That's right. Only a diversion that no one expects. How I cherish you, Mr. Krestowski. The first group of players seeking their pendants had already supplied me with diamonds and all the necessary ingredients. All that was left was to find the time to embody the template in-game. What had happened when I was creating the template? That's right, a big explosion. I'm certain that it won't be any weaker now. The Hermit wants war? Excellent. She will get it. She wants me to take a normal approach and craft some artifact? I'm about to bury her in artifacts. I call on you, O pendants, on the count of three. One, two, just sign on the dotted line. Skill increase, plus one, reputation with the Hermit. Current status, enmity. Points remaining until mistrust, 11,999.
Oh, mother of our earth!
Cornick's voice seeped through the light that filled the room and plunged it into a haze.
I beg you not to be angry with my student and allow him to tell you his tale.
What? This is the battle?
Don't worry, Harbinger. Your student just explained everything to me,
the Hermit replied in a satisfied voice. The lighting returned to normal, and I saw scorched walls, Cornick on his knees, and the Hermit twice as large as she had been earlier, with her eyes closed in pleasure, reclining in the throne that was now too small for her. She opened her eyes with visible effort, looked over at me and then at Cornick, then at me again, and sighed heavily.
A follower of Commandant and his masters is incapable of creating an item of such purity. In that case, I'll leave you two alone.
Cornick got to his feet, smirked, and, turning to me, added,
I'll be waiting for you tomorrow in Annhurs. You will have to pay a penalty for a false summons. Can you imagine summoning me like some errand boy? Oh, the people a poor goblin will have to work with.
It looked like Cornick couldn't care less that among the shamans he and I were of the same rank, and he had no right to punish me. For him, I had remained the errant student who bungled everything he touched, and who needed to be punished.
Allow me to see the key one more time, shaman,
the Hermit asked once the goblin had vanished. I retrieved the dwarves and offered them to the tensed-up woman. I wonder what is eliciting this reaction in her.
Yes, this is he,
the cave's owner said after a short pause.
Marvelous! You are following in Commandant's footsteps, and yet you are crafting holy artifacts. How is this possible?
Honorable Hermit, I tried to be as respectful and polite as I could. The woman's question was clearly rhetorical, requiring no answer, so I decided to ply my line. Please explain what you're talking about. Unfortunately, I don't seem to understand, and—
Enough!
The cave's owner cut me off with notes of anger in her voice.
I have absorbed the energy of your creation, and now know you much better than you know yourself. deep inside, you are anything but well-intentioned and polite. Don't try to appear dumber than you are in actual fact. Call me Linnea.
Okay. In that case, here's what happened. The hermit status was unclear to me, so I decided to simply tell her what connected me with the chess set of Carmondant, beginning with my desire to create the orcs, demonstrating them to Linnea there and then, and ending with my realization that I wanted to create the chess set as I was crafting the Tourmaline War Lizards. Wishing to develop the topic of Carmondant, I told her everything that I had managed to find out about him. The great emperor who united the empire of humans. The great creator who crafted unique items, among which only the imperial throne of Malabar survived to this day. A hunter who managed to survive where everyone else fell. Linnea didn't interrupt me, listening attentively and smiling to herself as I listed Carmondant's achievements. Finally, I concluded my monologue. After a short pause, Linnea said pensively,
"Human memory is a strange thing. It wishes to remember everything bad and evil that ever happened in history, and yet it is afraid to enter the very source of this darkness. And for this reason, it idealizes it, whitewashes it, imbues it with heroic qualities, while everything good and holy that fought against the darkness is tainted and blackened. I'm afraid I have to disappoint you, Shaman. Carmondant was never a kind and generous ruler. To the opposite, he was the head priest of the Tarantulas, and really did unite the human tribes into a single empire, massacring everyone else in the process. Learn the true history of this man, and then you will understand my reaction to the chess pieces you created."
Carmondant really was a great man. However, just as with the dragons, he was a great man on the wrong side of history. Linnea didn't know how the simple hunter had earned the power of an emperor, and where he encountered the Tarantulas to whom he bowed his knee. But one fact was clear. Carmondant gained his power after he returned from his search for the Urgrice. I smirked thoughtfully. There were simply too many signs pointing to the cave whose coordinates some random player was trying to sell to me. My premonition insisted that I wouldn't be able to avoid going there. After he returned, Carmondant assembled an army of followers, seized power in a small kingdom, and began to methodically annihilate his neighbors, feeding the souls of his captive foes to the Tarantulas. At the same time, Carmondant began to create, wishing to demonstrate to the world the perversity of his essence. "But the imperial throne is not an unholy object," I cried, surprised.
"True, except that an emperor who sits on the throne must die in order to leave it. He cannot live even 6 months without it. Could you really call this a holy object? And keep in mind that Illuna worked on the other aspects of the throne, removing many of them from memory. Even she did not manage to destroy the lifelong bond. Despite his immense might, the emperor remains a slave of the throne. He loses his freedom the same instant that he places his crown on his head."
In general, Carmondant turned out to be a fairly interesting craftsman. For example, the Altarian falcon, the scepter of power he created and Guernica's most desired item, turned out to be a banal device for mind-controlling others. The wielder of the scepter could bend the will of any creature and force it to do his bidding. Or the Annihilator, the coordinates to which I received back in Erebus. Carmandont created this item in order to butter up his masters, the tarantulas. This last bit of news came as an utter surprise to me, since I had figured that it had been Chaos who had created the Annihilator. Everything turned out much more interesting and convoluted. If it weren't for the story with the dragons, who had, in the span of an hour, gone from the guardians of Barleona to one of its most terrifying nightmares, I would have never believed Linnea. Yet she spoke with such a melancholy smile that I couldn't really doubt her for a second. I needed to review history. Therefore, when I saw a piece of the key destroyed by Commandant himself, I thought about his return to this world. Want me to tell you something only you know? When you were creating the chess set, your artificer level didn't change. For this is not an artifact. It is a key. The tomb has already been opened, I said carefully, trying not to stir any unnecessary emotions in Linnea. Practice showed that the woman was mercurial and belonged to the tribe of shoot first, ask questions later. That's what you think. The hermit shook her head sadly. You opened the passage, but you didn't open the tomb itself. The point of the chess set isn't to open something. To the opposite. Carmandont created them with a single goal in mind, to inter the creator inside. Even if you complete the full set, you won't get inside. The entrance to the tomb does not exist in Barleona, nor the tomb itself. I'd have discovered it long ago. Trust me, mountains do not pose much of an obstacle to me. Then where does the opened passage lead? I asked in shock. That doesn't interest me. Enough about Commandant. In my view, Shaman, you are not yet ready to set out on the path of the Artificer. Before moving forward, you must fulfill your duties to the other free citizens. Complete the pendants, give them to the lovers, and then return to me. Then I shall show you what it means to be an Artificer. And now, go. You still have much to do. Quest updated. The creator of the world. Description. Complete the pendant quest, fulfilling the orders from players up to the current date. Then, return to the hermit for further instructions. I had 100 questions for the hermit. But as soon as I opened my mouth, my surroundings wavered, and a moment later resolved into the familiar sight of the Elma Mountains, a huge number of players, and a tranquil lake of lava. Linnea cast me out of her cave like some naughty kitten. Who was she, anyway? My return was accompanied by various special effects. There was no other way to explain the attention I received from the crowd of players. They were expecting revelations and explanations from me, such as, for example, why I'd brought them all there. So I had to take a breath and come up with an excuse on the spot. A big thanks to everyone. We accomplished what we needed to and got everything we were planning on getting. The imitator will distribute the rewards among the participants, Marl is hereby named the official leader of the raiders of our clan, and you may address any questions you have to her. Thank you again for your quick response time and work. I am confident that we will all see each other soon. I have many plans for further adventures together. By way of an additional bonus, I'd like you to know that our castle portal will be available for your use free of charge for the next week. Viltrius will send you wherever you like, whenever you like. Judging by the hubbub that ensued among the players, they'd been expecting something more concrete from me, accompanied by a demonstration of unique items I had acquired. And yet, I concluded my speech and dissolved among the crowd. Before telling the world the true history of Carmondont, I needed to discuss this news with Stacy. Did it even make sense to do this? "Will there be a video?" her thought instantly occurred to me. "No, it was blocked. I'll tell you everything this evening. What's the news with the Celestial Empire?"
"They're coming. They'll be here in 2 hours. Grab Plinto and let's go. We don't have any time."
"It's a dumb question, but still, do you have a mole in their clan?"
"Just as they do in ours. Don't let the small stuff distract you. We need to stop our guests in their tracks."
Were I a bit more sentimentally disposed, I would say that a crisp sea breeze tousled my hair while one of the most beautiful women in the world was pressed up against me, her eyes shut in bliss. But the fact was that we had clambered aboard Stacy's ship, which had sailed ahead of time to meet us at the likely landing site of the Celestial Empire fleet, and were now intrepidly rushing athwart the waves and away from the continent, clutching the rigging and trying not to topple overboard from the violent rolling. A storm had settled over the seas.
"Visual contact in 10 minutes!"
yelled Calran, who had somehow become the captain of Stacy's vessel. I don't even want to imagine what my wife had promised Griggs's right-hand man to entice him over to her free-me vessel.
"Mayan,"
Plinto jibed sarcastically, getting comfortable in his catapult basket,
"I'll bet anything that your depraved mind is responsible for coming up with this mode of conveyance. Who else could think of shooting players at enemy ships? Tamerlane, stop screwing around and hop on board. This ride's about to take off."
Tamerlane the Wondrous, a tank from Phoenix, tied a rope around his waist that was supposed to keep us tethered together as we traveled through the air and then climbed up to join Plinto in the basket. I couldn't help but crack a smile. The warrior, who was as huge as a buffalo, clad in plate armor, crushed the rogue completely under him, pressing him into the catapult's depths. Plinto uttered a taut grunt and proclaimed a choice, unkind oath against all tanks, including Tamerlane. It didn't seem like the rogue frequently had the opportunity to press up against a large male body, even if just in the game.
"Visual contact in 5 minutes," Calran reminded us,
spurring me to join the pile. Tying the rope around me, I crawled on top of Tamerlane, who didn't even notice my insignificant addition to his mass. To Plinto's advice that I lose some weight, please, I blurted out something prickly, trying to conceal the trembling of my hands. Even though I enjoyed flying a lot, right now I didn't feel like myself. It's not every day that you get catapulted by, a catapult.
"We have visual contact. We're entering the no-fly zone."
10 seconds,
Anastaria commanded immediately.
9, 8.
The Celestial Armada didn't bother trusting fate and destiny, and therefore set up its no-fly zone to be as large as it possibly could be, as far as we could see. The horizon was quickly growing darker with the hundreds of approaching ships. My heart tightened. If we assume that each vessel is carrying 100 players, then a truly terrifying force is moving against Kalragan. Thousands of ships with 100 players in each. Stopping an avalanche this immense would be an impossible task.
3, 2, 1, blast off!
My chest compressed, locking in the last breath I took, and my heart collapsed into a point and crawled down to my heels, causing an unpleasant sensation beneath my stomach. And all of this was caused by my own emotions and phobias, since I was still playing with my sensations turned off.
"Whee!"
Plinto cried happily. Forcing my way through the thick wind, I turned my head and saw the rogue dangling at the other end of the rope tied to Tamerlane's waist, his arms stretched out as if they were wings. Plinto was savoring the act of flying, something you could not say about our tank. Tense and contorted like an embryo, he was muttering something under his breath. I'm sure that if we would be doing this out in reality right now, a head of broccoli would have envied the green on the warrior's face. The Celestial Armada was approaching us as fast as a bullet. We hadn't even reached the apex of our trajectory when the first enemy ships began to pass beneath us. The system notified us that there were players, with difficult-to-pronounce names, targeting us, and every second there were more and more of them. Our arrival had not gone unnoticed. The Celestial Empire was sailing to Kalragan's shores in a broad, expansive formation, in the center of which three solitary ships were moving on their lonesome. Our mission objective. I was happy to discover that I had been right to assume that there would be an area where flying was permitted within the fleet's perimeter. Players mounted on the celestial analogs of our griffins were darting in barely perceptible dots between the ships below us.
"We need the right one!" yelled Plinto,
pointing at the largest ship of the three. How he managed to spy the statue from this height remained a mystery to me, but I wasn't about to argue with him. Turning into my dragon form, I pulled the warrior and rogue over to me, placed them on my back, spread my wings, and barely avoided an uncontrolled fall. Our flight velocity was so great that my wings were almost torn off. Cursing several times for not having found the time to practice this maneuver, I folded my wings and began to extend them little by little in the hope of lowering our speed. We had almost reached the far side of the armada when I finally managed to open my wings without hurting myself and adjusted our bearing.
"Heh! Suckers!" smirked Plinto.
I didn't share his glee, however. The entire perimeter of the armada was littered with mages who were already summoning help. Appearing on the decks of their vessels, they immediately began mounting pterodactyls and soaring up into the sky. Judging by the number of pursuers now after us, the trajectory of our fall had already been calculated, and we'd encounter a warm welcome in another minute or so. Quickly, robustly, and professionally, and were we ordinary players, we'd go plummeting to our deaths in the cold waters. But I was a dragon, so thanks for playing, and until next time, like, subscribe, and all that jazz.
Tune in next time for the exciting adventures of the Lone Ranger and Tamerlane.
The rogue was entertaining himself, spurring me like a jockey on a racehorse. I couldn't see behind me, but I'd bet he was waving his arms, imitating a lasso. When we're back down on the ground, I'll kill that bastard.
Come on, Scout! Put a little more into it! Those flying chickens are gaining on us! Have you forgotten how to fly or what?
It only took me several flaps to tear away from our pursuers and smash into the sails of the ship Plinto had been directing us to. I didn't have the time to slow down for a gentle landing. The only thing that I managed to notice before getting tangled up in the rigging was the immense statue of a man with his arm raised upward. The statue was in the middle of the four-masted vessel, and the question of how Plinto had noticed it became even more mysterious.
"We're in position! Summoning now!"
We didn't try to risk it. If the choice is between two healers, one of whom is a level 300 shaman with a single unlocked spirit of healing, and the other is a level 352 paladin who had several hundred raids under her belt, the choice of the latter is more than evident. Stacy couldn't fly with us, since I didn't have the capacity to carry her. However, we had the unique ability of summoning each other to the other's location, which is what we now used to great effect. While I was dealing with the cordage and canvas that had wrapped me like a cocoon, three high-level Kalragan players rushed at the statue. It had to be destroyed at any price.
"Bravo!"
sounded a low male voice to the accompaniment of clapping. Someone was applauding us. Only now did I notice that there was no other sound, aside from my grunting as I struggled to free myself from the rigging. Neither Plinto striking the statue, nor the sounds of spells, nor the cursing of the celestial defenders. There was no sound at all. I was about to be surprised when I noticed the Sphere of Negation debuff, which blocked all sounds. No one could hear me wheezing besides myself, so nothing bad had happened. But the very fact that there was a sphere around me disheartened me. It takes some time to cast one of those. It would already have to be on the vessel at the time of our arrival.
"They were waiting for us. There's a mole in Phoenix,"
Anastaria confirmed my hunch. I became even more disheartened. Are they about to send us to respawn?
"Help the dragon,"
sounded an order, and the white canvas shrouding my vision slid aside. I couldn't help but curse when I beheld what was going on around me. Our intrepid commandos, Anastaria, Plinto, and Tamerlane, were alive and well and standing several meters in front of me, unable to move a muscle. And this was not due to some spell. There was nothing affecting us beside the Sphere of Negation. Everything was much simpler. Like a boy band cornered by its fans, the trio was surrounded by celestial players in an impassable stockade of bodies, arms, legs, and other body parts. The displeasure on Plinto's face demonstrated that he wouldn't be able to rescue us in this situation. After all, PvP was disabled here, too. The ship's crew heaved me to my feet and surrounded me. No one even thought of doing damage. In fact, our captors generally treated us like esteemed guests, as if this wasn't a game but reality, where human life actually means something. Strange. One of the other players, a level 389 warrior named Bayan, brought a hand to his mouth, and his voice resounded across the deck.
We welcome our dear friends from Kalragan to the ship of the Era of Dragons clan. We are especially happy to see a dragon in their midst. I had heard rumors that one of your players earned the ability to transform into this legendary creature, and today I have seen this miracle with my own two eyes. Please, accept my sincere apologies for your inconvenience, but I cannot allow you to destroy my obelisk. We need the tomb, and we shall have it.
I raised my head and beheld another shocking detail. Right over my head, my new dear friends from the Celestial were stretching out a net. Even though I had only just now thought of turning into a dragon and toppling the statue, our continent's guests had eliminated any chance of my suddenly taking flight. We were being outplayed, and our opponents stayed several moves ahead constantly. This was something I really didn't like one bit.
I invite our guests to my cabin, where we can discuss all these matters in the appropriate setting. No need to struggle, vampire. As you have already guessed, the PvP ban affects all of Barleona, not simply your continent. Thank you for arranging the tournament.
Stacy glanced over at me with surprise and immediately lunged forward from a jolt to her back. The Celestial players began to use their bodies to push our trio in the direction of the cabin doors. A bald, level 313 warrior who had been standing behind Anastaria was trying hardest of all. I didn't hear what he said, but the expression on his face made it clear that he was enjoying pressing up against my wife and letting his arms run free along her body. Stacy couldn't do anything to him. She couldn't even turn around and show this bastard that what he was doing was wrong. So she pursed her lips and took a step forward, and then another, and another, and another.
"Dan, it's okay. He's barely touching me."
Before a white film descended over my eyes, I managed to hear Anastaria's thought. It's too bad that it appeared too late. The bald warrior was working the crowd, closing his eyes in ecstasy, sending virtual kisses and casting meaningful glances at his neighbors to show what a Casanova he was. And this ugly pantomime was finding a favorable reception among the crowd, too. However, there was at least one noble spectator among this clown's audience. Me. Anger fogged over my mind, so when the system notified me that I could not cast a spirit of lightning at this jerk, I resorted to extremes. Minor battle shadow. The power that Garenika had granted me, and which allowed me to summon the enemy of all that lived, the force that sought only to cast Barleona back into chaos. I'll be a ballerina in a provincial theater if the developers hadn't made the players vulnerable to Garenika's gifts. I selected the warrior and pressed the shadow icon with pleasure. The moment of truth had come. Was I a ballerina or a shaman? When the world vanished, a thought flashed in my mind. I'm not much of a dancer. Images flickered. The alabaster throne from the previous vision, the blackened creature sitting upon it, a crystal in the form of a heart on his knees, flickering. A laughing man standing before the throne, flickering. The crystal vanished, but the charred creature remained on the throne, impaled on its own staff. The creature was alive. No corpse ever had eyes so filled with pain. More flickering. Guernica pensively regarding the throne and the creature on it. Flickering. There was neither throne nor Guernica. Only the charred creature surrounded by 100 small orbs. Crestiles. When Barleona pushed the hallucination out of my head, the first thing I saw was a thick shadow coiling like a snake around the warrior. A look of astonishment filled his face when his HP began to fall. Yet this was almost instantly replaced by a malevolent gloat. The minor battle shadow was consuming him only at a rate of a tenth of HP per second. At this rate, I'll be killing this warrior over the course of several years. The bald player met my eyes, and with his laughter showed everything that he thought of me, as well as what he was planning on doing to Anastaria. Bad move on his part.
Guernica, I require your assistance,
I whispered in an icy voice. My emotions left me as if they'd never been. I felt nothing at all as I looked at the warrior, eyes rolled back, laughing. Neither hate, nor the desire to kill him, nor wrath. Only cold and ice. Stacy's thoughts were sounding in my head, but my condition didn't permit me to assemble the sounds into meaningful words. At the given moment, I didn't care about anything at all. Reputation, empires, the game in general, and Barleona in particular. The thug was pawing my wife right before my eyes. The thug had to die. There was no other way.
I am listening attentively, O shaman.
Guernica's voice sounded right above my head. The entire deck of the ship had gone quiet. All the players had their faces turned up. They could hear Guernica, despite the sphere of negation.
I would like to cast into the abyss all free citizens on this ship that do not belong to my clan.
I raised my head and saw the Lord of Shadow standing several meters from me on the taut net. Guernica was again dressed in his typical navy suit, which seemed as natural to Barleona as a submarine to ancient Egypt.
Nice request,
smirked the former shaman, and, ignoring the net, descended through it to the deck. He pushed away the celestial players surrounding us with an invisible field to keep them from interfering with our conversation and getting underfoot.
What would you give me in return?
What do you want? I answered his question with mine. At the given moment, I was ready to agree to anything.
2 months of service to Shadow.
The Lord of Shadow replied, as if he'd been waiting for this moment.
A week.
To everyone's surprise, especially mine, I began to barter by reflex. Guernica shook his head.
2 months, Mayan. 2 months. You will do my assignments, as strange as they might seem to you. No questions, no demands, no explanations. In return, I will grant you the ability to destroy the free citizens on this ship here and now.
I don't need the power to kill them, I cut him off, understanding that having to respawn wouldn't hurt the bald player one bit. I need to send them to the abyss.
Oh, the shaman knows his way around punishment,
Guernica said, surprised.
Everyone's used to seeing you as a docile little lamb. And here it turns out that you're a real bad apple. I have a condition. You? What's going on here?
Bayan roared, emerging from the hold. I supposed that someone had told him through the chat that something was going off plan, so the head of the clan decided to personally dispense his punishment.
Who dared enter my silence?
Garenika barked with irritation. He waved his hand, and everyone on the ship turned to statues in the manner I'd seen back in the dark forest. The Lord of Shadow had not lost any of his powers.
As I already told you, I decided to change the terms of my assistance to you.
Garenika turned to me as if nothing had happened. In my peripheral vision, I could see dozens, if not hundreds, of players on flying mounts smash against an invisible sphere that had appeared around the ship, slipping along its circumference into the sea, unable to reach their goal. Summoned by my call, the head of the Empire of Shadow made sure to keep us safe.
I will send everyone on this ship, aside from your clanmates, to the Abyss. In exchange, you will take part in the tournament under the banner of the Empire of Shadow. What do you say?
Dan, what the hell are you doing? What shadow?
Anastaria broke through my stuttering mind, but before I could find something to reply, Garenika got ahead of me and demonstrated that an NPC of his level has no problem reading telepathy.
What shadow? Why, the finest shadow in all of Barleona, I assure you, he said. There are several free citizens who have chosen the way of the shadows, but they are singular and aren't capable of organizing a tournament. I need Mayen precisely to show all of Barleona that the best fighters fight for me. Everything else is a cheap imitation.
Quest available. The Shadow Warrior. Description: during the tournament, you will fight for the Shadow faction. Lead its players at the tournament. Reward: friendly status with the Lord of Shadow, the Emperor of Malabar, and the Dark Lord of Cartus.
I agree. Send them to the Abyss.
I cut off all ways of retreat and agreed to a catastrophic drop in my reputation with the monarchs of the two empires. Given that I had exalted status with the Emperor and the Dark Lord, agreeing to a decrease in this status, to hell with it. This is a game, after all. I can always win it all back. And if not, to hell with it again.
Wonderful! Garenika smiled sincerely, and, unable to contain himself, rubbed his hands like a pawn shop dealer. Very nice doing business with you, Mayen. Until we meet at the tournament. And, oh yes, I am very sorry about Tamerlane.
I froze, unable to understand the meaning of these words, yet when the ship emptied, as at a wave of a magic wand, I cursed earnestly. The Phoenix's tank had been on the ship, and yet wasn't in my clan. In accordance to our agreement, Garenika dragged him down to the Abyss, too. Ekiler will, kill me. if Stacy doesn't do it first.
"What happened here?"
Bion asked menacingly, once he'd regained the ability to speak.
"Plinto, the statue!"
I ordered, trying to avoid looking at Stacy, who was standing still now due to my own actions rather than Garanika's orders. I'd figure things out with her later. In the evening, when she eats my brain. At the moment, only two things concerned me. The obelisk that Plinto needed 10 minutes to deal with, and Bion, who, for some reason, had stayed on the ship. I didn't have anything against the NPC sailors staring at us anxiously from the masts, but the player should have been sent to the abyss.
"Deals off, Garanika! You left one of the free citizens on the ship!"
I shouted into the air, understanding that under the game mechanics he'd hear me even on the other end of Barleona.
"The Lord of Shadow made no mistake, dragon," said a dark-haired woman emerging from the hold, demonstrating a fine understanding of Kalragan's geopolitics.
I did a double-take. The woman had bare appendages that resembled spider legs or wings that had been picked clean, sticking out from behind her back. Azari the Patient, such was the name of the level 400 priestess, watched closely as Plinto set upon the obelisk. I shuddered even more. The appendages were alive. This player could actually control the spindles on her back.
"Every player was sent to the abyss. These two are golems, perfect clones of the real players that the players can control from afar,"
Anastaria said without looking away from me.
"Mayan, meet Azari the Patient. Race, Kumo. She's a were-spider. Her appearance should tell you as much. She likes artifacts. She's the deputy head of the Era of Dragons clan. And she's also a proper bitch. The great Anastaria, a paladin healer, siren, the brains of the Phoenix clan who abandoned it all for her husband."
Azari didn't remain in Stacy's debt.
"A hysterical and useless doll that has nothing aside from a cute face and her daddy's money."
Azari smirked, and as she did so, the obelisk collapsed from a pretty statue into a pile of rocks.
"Got it." 2 minutes. Fascinating,"
Azari hummed, nodding her satisfaction.
"I was hoping to occupy Plinto for 5 minutes, no less." "God damn it,"
Stacy cursed telepathically.
"This is a setup. Judging by your calm face, you've already understood,"
smirked Azari.
"I suggest we head down to the hold and discuss the terms of your capitulation. I don't think anyone has any more doubts that our clan will be able to entrench itself on Kalragan territory. By the way, what is the Abyss? Where did you send our players?"
Chapter 7 Betrayal.
"Valerius liquor, highly recommended."
Azari decided to play the role of the welcoming host, offering us a drink. Understanding that there wasn't much else to do, we passed into Bion's captain's cabin and took our seats around a small round table. In doing so, the head of the Celestial Empire took the only armchair, allowing us to choose from a red and green chair. Even though the round table made everyone equals, someone wished to show that he was more equal.
"Stacy, why weren't they sent to the Abyss?"
I was still beset by the mystery. Guernica couldn't avoid fulfilling our agreement to a T. Otherwise, the system would have already punished him and freed me from the stupid quest. As soon as the bald warrior had vanished, my ability to think clearly returned to me, and with it the shock of my forthcoming drop in reputation. But there was nowhere to run. I would have to represent Shadow at the tournament.
Because these aren't players, or rather, these aren't the players' characters. Judging by your furrowed brow, I'm sure you two are having a fascinating exchange on the telepathic channel.
Azari didn't bother concealing that she knew all about our ability to communicate without speaking aloud. I was about to freak out that the priestess knows too much when her next words put everything in place. She didn't know a damn thing.
I received a notification that you've already crafted my pendant, Mayan. When will you send it to me?
Speak to my manager, I replied, sighing in relief in my mind. This spider needed a pendant, and that's what she thinks we're using to speak to one another. This means that if something goes wrong, she will try to block the item and not a unique ability. That alone was good news. By the way, so why aren't you two in the abyss? Any player who isn't in my clan should have been sent for a time out in that closed location, and even mages wouldn't be able to get you out, so you simply shouldn't be here. Yet you're still here.
So that's what the abyss is,
Azari smiled.
I'm even curious about the penalty you had to pay. Sending 100 players to a closed location through an NPC, your karma should have taken a hefty blow.
You didn't answer my question, I insisted once more. Why aren't you in the abyss?
Because I'm not here to begin with. Neither I nor Bayan are on the ship at the moment.
And we're speaking to ghosts? I jibed, though Plinto's eyes made it clear that there wasn't anything funny about my joke.
Not quite ghosts. Didn't your lovely girlfriend tell you about the singular and unparalleled beauty? I mean, myself here, who has been crushing her in every possible and impossible battle for the last 4 years? Raid tactics and strategy, improvisation in the face of evolving situations, decision-making accuracy, an actual social life outside of the game. She's only second, everywhere and always. The one time that she surpassed me was the one time I didn't compete. I mean, the Miss Barleona contest. Nature must compensate for a lack of intelligence, so it granted her a homely appearance. But even there, this doll only managed to earn second place. Habit, I suppose. She's just so...
Maybe you'll stop demonstrating to the whole world how much you envy my wife. I interrupted Azari's fascinating monologue. You didn't answer my question.
Why should I answer it at all, shaman? The Kumo asked, surprised. You're not in a position to dictate terms. This ship is surrounded by thousands of players who want nothing more than to tear you into little pieces. Only the will of my master keeps them from doing so. I'll be the only one doing the talking here while you agree to my terms and sign on the dotted line. Do you understand?
Azari decked the last question in so much ice and charisma that if we'd been out in reality, I'd already be a piece of ice sitting in front of her and trying to make myself even smaller and less noticeable. But we were in Barleona, and this silly girl had permitted herself to say some bad words about my wife. So I have the